Hello, and welcome to the Conscious Hoofbeat Podcast. This is a podcast that explores the interconnectedness of our health and the health of our horses through self-care, mindfulness, and personal development, along with a little equine wisdom and wellness. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Maynard, the passion-driven equinologist. I have dedicated my life to the horse. Some call me a fanatic, and I claim it, because I'd rather be dead than horseless. I'm a published author and researcher, equine body worker, energy facilitator, and I am passionate about deepening the human-horse experience. Join me here every Monday where I share my spiritual journey with horses, woo-woo horse care practices, and shared lived experiences from horsewomen around the world. Today, I invited author and equine gestalt coach Nancy Lee Gerson. With limited horse riding experience and no formal equitation training, native New York attorney Nancy Lee traveled to Colorado on a whim to attend a women's retreat with horses. She spent 5 days riding and communing with a very special horse named Cherokee, who became the ambassador for Nancy's life-changing serendipitous journey that was guided by interspecies connections and inspiring synchronicities. Nancy is a contributing writer in the Touched by a Horse Equine Coaching Series, Volume 1, and a former student of 23 years at the School of Practical Philosophy in New York City. Nancy recently published her memoir, The Horse Who Changed My Life, My Serendipitous Journey Through Equus. This book is a heartfelt story that documents the life-changing serendipitous journey of a New York City lawyer who learned how to deepen her capacity to connect to the wisdom of her heart and to the ancient wisdom of Equus, guided by interspecies connections and inspiring synchronicities. Welcome, Nancy Lee. Thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm very excited to be here. We're going to talk about horses and riding and the sacredness of relations with horses, all good stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that, does it?
No.
Well, I want to start off by reading my favorite part of the book, which I'm very blessed to say that my book is unique to any other one because you took the time to beautifully signed this for me, and I'm going to share this because I think it's just like the epitome of what Conscious Hoofbeat is really about. So Nancy wrote to me in my book, "Dear Pamela, how joyous and gratifying it is to caretake and love and learn from horses, and then be connected through them to kindred spirits in the human realm." And I love how you put a smiley face. "I look forward to more contact with you. In the meantime, please enjoy my love letter to Equus. Peace, Nancy Gerson." I love that. And what a beautiful thing that our love for horses has connected us, you know, and the beauty of technology and Zoom and Facebook and the internet. And now we can connect. And it's one of my most favorite things to do is to connect with like-minded, hearted, and spirited horsewomen. So very grateful that you connected with me and shared your book and your story. And I want to know, what inspired you to share this story and your journey in the written word? It was a very intimate experience for you, wasn't it?
It definitely was and is. As it happens, I'm a lifelong journaler, always been compelled to journal. And so there I was down this dirt road with horses and dogs and cats, no prior experience living with horses, and I wasn't living with any humans. And I would have these amazing new experiences with the horses, and then I would come back to the farmhouse. The horses were on my property, so I would just walk up the path to the farmhouse and journal about what I was discovering about them in the physical realm, the mental realm, emotional, spiritually. I was in a constant state of blown awayedness, making up words here. and I journaled it. Honestly, if I had had to write this book from whole cloth, Pamela, I don't know how I would have done that. You know, my memory wouldn't have been that keen, but I had so many journals to which to repair that made it easier.
Beautiful. So in a sense, I feel like the book kind of wrote itself.
Yeah. With a wonderful editor, though. Editing is a very important part of that process. The book really, as you say, wrote itself. At the same time, a good editor will add some flow to it. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting thing, because it started out with, it was a little kind of bloggy, a little like individual essays. So all of my content stayed in, minus a couple of poems, but the editor helped the flow. Encouraged me to write a final sentence here to this chapter, an opening sentence to another chapter, just to get that flow.
Sure.
But you're right, it really wrote itself because of the awesome experiences I was having.
Yeah, and I think people nowadays think, oh, anybody can publish a book, right? Because we can self-publish and blah, blah, blah. But not anybody can sit down and take the time and write it. Right, and put it together, and it's a process. It really is. From even though you had your journals, to go back and put that together, and the editing process to the print process, it's a commitment. So I really acknowledge you for that.
Well, thank you, and thank you very much. And I think you asked me what had inspired me to turn it into a book, and the simple answer is that the people in where I was living, I was living alone, but if I would describe to anybody that I was keeping journals about these experiences, everybody's faces lit up. Everybody's eyes lit up when I would describe to them the experiences I was having as a newbie. And a couple of people said, oh, that would make a great book. One person said it would make a great movie. And I thought, okay, well, journals tend to just get put in drawers. Like the other journals that I kept years before having horses, nobody's read them. You write them for yourself. But then it occurred to me that people were really lit up by my stories. It made them feel happy. It went to their heart. So that helped me decide to put it out into the world.
So you're really, what I hear you say is you were guided to do it. Once again, you listened to your inner guidance system.
Yeah. I have a bunch of years of experience at a philosophy school where I'm still calling it pausing was part of my life, still is, some meditation in there. And so I know about practicing stillness. I didn't know that animal communication could come in when you get still. I got certified in Reiki. And so getting still and then invoking Reiki, these things started coming together. I'm probably taking you all over the map here, but I'm flowing with our sweet interview. Just the practices of stillness started coming together in different forms, and all with the caretaking of the animals, which was so sacred.
Yeah, so the book is just a piece of that, just a piece of the bigger picture, right? Beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. One thing that I will say, the tie-in, stillness is something that horses love. This is a good thing to really kind of tie it all together, whether it's meditation, whether you're just standing quietly with your horse, whether you're practicing, tuning into what your body's telling you while you're standing next to them, whether you're observing them, they love the stillness. You can be putting your hands on them or hovering above. You can be doing any kind of energy work with a horse or talking to them. They really just love that you're standing quietly with them, not frenzied, not bringing the whole craziness of the day to them. They love the stillness, really.
Yeah. So I know many people have found your book both entertaining and inspiring, and it encourages the reader to take a deeper look at the directions of their own lives. What do you believe is the value in taking notice of the serendipities and the synchronicities in our lives?
Well, for one thing, you really get to sense that life is very juicy because, we all have the day in and day out affairs that we have to get to, the tasks, the jobs, the responsibilities. But in between those things, you can actually notice interesting timings of things. I guess the classic one is you'll think of somebody you hadn't thought of for years, and then the phone rings and it's that person. They're simple things. It's not very mysterious or esoteric, so that not everybody can get this or something. Everybody can get this. You just start watching the patterns that kind of that get created. I mean, the way I ended up with a life of horses, just one thing led to another. I went on a retreat about guitars, learning to play some extra special things with guitars. Then I came home and I was practicing some of those things I had learned at the guitar retreat. And what came out of me was a song about riding on horses. I had never dreamt about riding horses. I never owned a horse, but this song came out of me. I never wrote a song so fast. The chords, the lyrics about saddling up and riding a horse. And then a couple of weeks later, I went to my computer to think about what retreat I might like to go on, like women's retreats, nature's retreats, silent retreats. I did not ask about animal retreats. And then what came up on my computer was a horse retreat. And the only spaces they had open were the exact week that I was going to have available to go away. And then
No
I went on that retreat.
coincidence. No coincidence.
Yeah.
I love it.
No, not at all. Not at all.
That's beautiful. So you chose to trust the messages that came to you, and then you went, which led you to the retreat. And then while you were meditating at the retreat, it gave you the quiet strength to take all the practical steps that led you across the country to relocate your life with the horse you fell in love with at the retreat, Cherokee. So, what would your life look like today, do you think, if you hadn't followed your synchronicities and all those signs and that came to you?
I probably would be, I probably would still be journaling a lot. I would always be looking for some kind of creative outlet. Maybe I would have taken up yoga or knitting again. It was clear that I was in search of some juice in life. I'm a lawyer by profession. I still practice a bit as well. So I probably would have kept going with the law practice and journaling and longing for something creative. I don't know exactly what else I would have found, but my love of animals was always there. It just wasn't like coming out in a really big way, but going to the horse retreat allowed it to come out in a really big way. And that's led to getting certified in Reiki so I can work with other people's animals. So the love of animals just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and communicating with them. I don't know what I would do without those elements in my life now.
Well, so you've always had animals like cats and dogs in your life, right?
Yes.
And you but you said that you were a complete neophyte, your term, not mine, that when it came to anything but nose trail rides, let alone living alone with horses and being their sole caretaker. How did becoming the caretaker of horses change your life?
Well, it became a complete immersion in trust for sure. The first month that I had Cherokee, he's the horse who changed my life. He's the titular horse there. I've had other horses and I still have Cherokee, but he has been my muse. The first month that I had, that we were living together, he developed a little eye infection, and there I am, a complete newbie. I had to put ointment under the lower lid of his eye for like 5 or 6 days in a row. And the willingness of this horse to submit to that absolutely, you know, kind of brought me to my spiritual knees. So he had to trust me. I had to trust myself. I had to trust him. And I was down this dirt road in Longmont, Colorado, putting ointment in my new horse's eyeball, you know?
So way, way different from your law office in New York City, right?
Definitely, definitely couldn't be more different.
So along this journey, you were able to discover animal communication and learn how to heed the advice you were given and honor each and every exchange with an animal that felt like a telepathic communication. And you call it erring on the side of yes. By doing this and ignoring the dismissive thoughts that sometimes arose for you, you paved the way to more telepathic experiences. Can you speak to these experiences and share with the listeners?
Yeah. The erring on the side of the yes, that's just a phrase that arose in mind once, and I liked it. I think it nails what a couple of really master animal communicators had said to me in their own words. And in my mind, it came through as err on the side of the yes. I was trained a bit by Anna Twinney and Nancy Windhart, Melissa Pierce. These are people who, Michelle Griffith, they really do quite a lot of masterful animal communication. And plus they did some studying, took some courses as well. And there are different ways that messages can come through. Sometimes it's words that you hear in mind. You can see colors in mind. Sometimes you get a somatic awareness in part of your body. Sometimes it's just a gut feeling, a knowingness. Sometimes heat can arise. So by acknowledging whatever one of those has come through for me, it's kind of like you're telling spirit, okay, bring on more. I believe in this and I'm an open vessel for more. So one time I was sitting with the horses, one of my horses, and I got a very strong feeling around my throat area, right around the throat. A couple of tears came down too. And the connection was that I needed to let this horse have a voice. It was a rescued horse. And I needed to let the horse have a voice as to when he was going to be touched, when he was going to be asked to step away from an object, just kind of let him have a voice. And that's what had come through. And then I practiced that with the horse. I'm not really rough with my horses. I believe they all should have a voice, but this came through with this particular horse. So I paid good attention to whether the horse was giving me their willingness. If I had to put a spray on part of the body, that week I had to put a little ointment or spray on the body, and I held the bottle up first. I held it up to the horse's head area. Some people say you wait for a blink. Mm-hmm. Other people wait for other signs, but sure enough, I held the spray bottle up. And after several seconds, the horse blinked, brought his head a little closer to me. And I put a little bit of spray on the cheek area there. And I believe it came from that message of letting him have a voice.
Sure. It was really interesting for me to read your story because I had like the complete opposite experience as you. I grew up on a farm. Now, I was the only horse person in my family, but I've always had cows and cats and dogs and animals. And like, I've just always talked to animals and I've always heard them. And sometimes it's to the point where it's like, you know, if I go into somebody else's barn and they're like sometimes screaming at me and I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't help you or whatever. So sometimes it's, you know, a blessing or a curse, right? And so it's interesting for me, for somebody who I guess in a sense takes it for granted, or I just don't, I didn't know the other, the other side of the coin, and to hear somebody to be able to articulate it, because I can't always articulate it because it's such just an innate part of me. And I really acknowledge you for, taking the time to learn this and honor your horses, and, because I see so many times that go down a really bad road when people, aren't experienced and they don't take the time to learn and listen, and it could have been a really bad experience for you. Instead, it turned out to be this beautiful journey. And, oh, go ahead.
I actually, no, I was going to say, I marvel that you've come at it from the how you expressed that, if there was something you would want to take for granted, it would be that all sentient beings can communicate. I love that that was taken for granted. That's the best way that phrase could be used, because taking something for granted kind of gets a bad rap, that phrase. But I love that that was something that was taken for granted by you. It delights me to hear that.
Yeah, it was just, it's just a way of life for me. I'm like, I hear these, see these people and hear them talk about, like, oh, I don't know if I'm doing it right. And I'm like, it's not a right or wrong. It goes back to like being in that space, right? You had that background of meditating and stuff to be in that space. And growing up on a farm, and I was alone a lot. I didn't have kids in the neighborhood to play with. My animals were my best friends. And when you're around animals all the time, you just automatically are in that space. So it comes naturally to a child, right? Like, we know that. And so it's whether or not we take that into adulthood with us, I think. A lot of times, we turn into adults and, oh, you can't talk to the cats no more because it's weird, or, you're crazy. And
Actually, you probably didn't mean to necessarily seg into this now, but I'm actually writing, my next book is a piece of fiction. I've never written fiction before, and it's really fun to discover that I can write dialogue and develop characters. And the main character is going to be this young girl who talks to and with animals, and some of the adults around her are going to be more supportive of it than others. Primarily, she has good support, but some get it more than others. And there's going to be this one wise older woman who definitely gets it. And it's a poignant relationship, because that older woman would had that capacity squelched as a child, ridiculed, and it went away. And now the woman runs an animal sanctuary, and this little girl volunteers there with her mother. So the older woman who runs the sanctuary is delighted that this young girl has the capacity, and is it's not being squelched by her parents, to whatever extent they understand it or not. They're at least honoring it. So thank you for the opportunity. This is the first time I've talked about the new book. I'm very excited about it. It's going to have animal communication. It's going to have there's going to be a young teenager who's on the autism spectrum, who's going to get along really well with the horses, and that's going to bring out his ability to be socializing with human beings more too. I'm going to bring in a bunch of the elements that are dear to me.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And it sounds like you're writing a little bit about my childhood. I love it.
Good.
That's wonderful. Well, that takes care of one of my other questions about your next book coming up. But I want to go back to this major life overhaul that you had, and that took place less than 4 months after that retreat. And you had mentioned that it looked like a show of courage to others that were looking like from the outside in. But for you, it was simply, what had to take place. And so whatever steps were needed, you put those steps in place. And you didn't feel like you were courageous. So can you just explain a little bit like what that was for you, if it wasn't courage?
Yeah, it was I mean, at the time I was already just about 50 years old, and I had had good, you know, law career and good family members, and it could have just been kind of complacently staying with that. I'm honored to be part of the legal profession. And as I say, the family relations are rich and wonderful. They were then and they are now. And yet at the same time, once that message came through when I was meditating under the tree at that horse retreat, it just came through that I was going to move to Colorado and I was going to live with Cherokee. And that was such a declaration that came from the heart that there really didn't feel like there was a choice about it. There were lots of pragmatic steps that had to take place, had to tell the family about it. And then I just kept bringing Cherokee to mind. And I think it's something that a lot of people, you know, from the outside, these look like big steps. And it, I mean, I moved 1800 miles away and I took up life with horses. So it was big. But when you feel something that strongly, it kind of propels you. It carries you along. You ride the wave of that certainty. You know, there aren't, you don't get that kind of certainty of intention just willy-nilly. When it comes along and grabs you, it gives you like a fortitude. It was very strong. I just didn't have any doubt. And I think a lot of people aren't encouraged to follow that. And I really hope the book will inspire people to, they don't have to move 1800 miles away and live with horses, but notice patterns in their life. And if they get an aha, a eureka moment, along with the different patterns, the different serendipities, the phone call that comes from somebody that leads them to, you know, read this book that speaks to them about some topic they'd forgotten about. And then there's a retreat or a workshop that's going to be taking place on that very topic that they just read in that book that the person they hadn't spoken to in 5 years recommended. Yeah. It goes like that. Then they go to that workshop and they meet somebody and they're networking. I hope the book inspires people to pay attention to those serendipities that fall at their feet.
Yeah, I loved that you even shared with me like how my podcast just started playing on its own in the background. And you were like, and so you listened to that and you followed it. And I was like, that is so cool. And it's like, I always say all of that, there are no coincidences. Everything happens for a reason. No. And, you know, I even say like the horses are always talking, but are you listening? So it comes to like this stuff always is happening, but are we in a place to hear it and pay attention? And it's really beautiful. I get.
Yeah, you also have to surround yourself. I'm so sorry.
I cut you off. Go ahead.
I was going to say that an inspiration. We also have to surround ourselves into the new life. There's no sense trying to get into toxic conversations about it with people who might think your idea is impractical, silly. Why surround ourselves with people who are going to dismiss our passions, our ahas, our eureka moments? So that's something that I think everybody can look to in their lives. We all have people in our lives who make us feel really strong. And then there are those people who maybe they don't make us feel good about ourselves. And taking a look at who you're surrounding yourself with, rather, because these ahas and eurekas and inspirations are very precious, you know, however you conceive where they come from spirit, from your heart, from God, however you conceive it. When a spark comes, they're to be honored, and you want to surround yourself with people who honor your honoring of the spark.
I love that.
That makes sense.
That makes absolute sense. And I thank you for sharing that. And all I was going to say was like, I understand that because I have similar stories. Like I can relate in that, when I graduated from high school, all my friends were going to college, which I did later in life, but I knew it wasn't the right thing for me right then. I would have ran off with all my girlfriends, and I have girlfriends that never finished college, or it took them 8 years to get a bachelor's degree because they didn't know what they wanted to do and they were partying. But I knew I wanted to do horses, so I moved from North Dakota to Tucson, Arizona to do a 2-year apprentice program at Almara Arabians. And my dad bought me a round trip ticket because he thought for sure I was going to get homesick and want to come home. And I never used the other half of that ticket because the horses were calling me. Like I just knew that that was my path to go down, and there was no looking back. It just wasn't. What it didn't even cross my mind. Like I didn't have time to be homesick. I was with beautiful Arabian horses 24/7. I lived on the property. Like how can you be homesick? It was amazing. So yeah, and I and about
Yeah, I can.
I love that you shared about
No, I was
people.
just going to say, I can imagine why my book resonates for you. That's what I was just going to say. Please tell me what you,
Yeah,
tell me
and
what else you were
well,
going to
I
say.
just love that you talk about, there's those people in our lives that lift us up, and then there's those that don't support our horse crazy, I call it. And I'm learning now as I'm getting older to really step into my truth and start honoring what I'm called to do, and not letting my friends, I call it pushing me back down in the chair. They're nice about it, right? They're like, they put their hands on my shoulders and nicely just put, push me back down and say, no, Pamela, you don't want to do that. No, that's not practical, right? And meanwhile, when you don't honor that calling, you have that inner turmoil and it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, big time. And there are many people in the animal world, you probably have met some, who will say that they have no use for human beings and they only want to be around animals. And I don't think we can subscribe to that path as we walk the red road. I do believe that we're meant to be able to live with our own species more nicely than we do, and we can learn the lessons from animals. For goodness sakes, they learn how to cooperate in much better ways than we do often. But in the end, we have to be able to get along with people too. And so getting yourself surrounded by those who support you is a good first step, because even within the realm of good relationships, things can sometimes get a little squishy, but at least we should give ourselves a running start at good human relations and surround ourselves with a loving, supportive people,
Yes, I agree. My dad always used to say, we as humans are social animals, right? And we know that horses are herd animals, and horses don't thrive by themselves. And I know people that'll have a horse and put them with the cows, or oh, they can see the neighbor's horses, but herd animals don't thrive unless they are in their herd.
That is correct. I'm pretty mushy about well, animals. I'll just to finish that sentence. I'm pretty mushy about animals. When I see a horse in a field, in a big field, my eye scans. I'm sure you're like this. My eye scans right to left, forward and back, praying that I'm going to see one more horse. Just let me
Yeah.
see one more horse as I drive by, then I can feel happy.
Yeah, I mean, there's scientific research to back it up, first of all. It's not because, oh, I'm a crazy horse lady, and I mean, there is research to back it up, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen that video with that, and Warwick Schiller talks about it too all the time in a lot of his podcasts about how this woman had this Mustang she adopted, and he was living home alone, and he'd been home alone for 2 years and had never slept. And he comes to the clinic and he finally feels safe and has some horses around him, and he lays down in the middle of the arena flat out and sleeps for like 3 hours.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I mean, forgive me, Warwick or Warwick followers, if I didn't say the story, verbatim,
No, it's
but
great.
it's the gist of it, right? Like that we need each other, we need our herds for safety.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the discoveries. I know I journaled about it, that when you have a group of horses, often one will stand sentry while the others are lying down. One will often stand sentry, stay standing. And I watch my own horses, they'll trade off which one's lying down. There was one time that I actually caught sight of all three horses lying down at the same time. And I had to end. It was a perfect trifecta. They were all lying down at the same time. My German Shepherd started weaving quietly through the three of them, and I had my cell phone and ready to film it. It was just a perfect storm in the right way. So
Wow.
I captured it on film. The idea that all three horses could feel comfortable lying down at the same time was glorious to me, because I had already been learning that often one will stand sentry, will stand up. They were just feeling that secure. It was very early morning, and I caught it, and my shepherd, they didn't even get up when my shepherd went quietly weaving through them. It was a beautiful moment.
That's cool that you got it on camera. Yeah,
Yeah.
my Pinto gelding, he is the one that stands up on the little mound and looks around and keeps an eye on things for everybody. And he's always concerned where everybody is. Like if we're rotating turnouts or somebody goes out for a ride, he makes sure he knows where everybody is at all times. Like he's not the most dominant one, but that's the role he plays. And I love it when I find him laying down with the other gelding, or I have four, and I have a coming 2-year-old and an older mare, and the 2-year-old's a quarter horse and he's like 14 hands, and the mare is a Selle-Francais warm blood and she's like 16 too, and I love seeing them when they lay together. It's so cute.
Yeah, I bet you love the sight of the one who's vigilant lying down. That must be a very precious sight for your heart.
Yeah, it always warms my heart to watch them and observe and take notes. I journal, but I need to write more stuff down. You're inspiring me.
Oh, good.
I take a lot of mental notes, and then I'm like, oh, I'll write it down when I get in the house, and then the week goes by, and then it's not fresh, and you lose it. So.
Yeah, we were talking about the importance or lesson that I learned about trust in living with horses for the first time. So, what I don't trust is my memory. So, hence the journaling. I know it's a negative sentence to say, but there it is. You know how you said there are no coincidences. So that adage about how there are anything about coincidences, I also don't subscribe to. I don't think there are coincidences. The other adage that I really agree with, that one where people will say, oh, well, if it's really important, you'll remember it. I totally do not trust that. I don't know how I would have written this book if I had just trusted that all the important things would be remembered. Simply don't think that was the case. I needed to journal. So I highly encourage journaling unless you all trust your memory to be exquisitely accurate.
Yeah, which I don't think happens very often.
Write it down.
Yes, write it down. As a part of this journey of yours, you ended up becoming a certified equine gestalt coach, which requires, rigorous 2-year program in Colorado, and it allowed you to co-partner with horses and help people explore their unfinished business by getting a look at the shadowy parts of self, which I love. I feel more people need to be looking at their shadowy parts. And your book has several coaching session descriptions in it, for those who want to, dive into that in more detail. I want to know, though, how this work led you to become, attuned to, level 2 Reiki, and how does incorporating Reiki into your work with the horses elevate the co-partnering part of it with the coaching?
Well, the whole thing again, very serendipitous. when I discovered the horse retreat, and I wasn't even looking for horse retreats on the computer after writing the song about the horses, then I started going on the internet to check out horse properties or farmhouse properties where I was going to be living in Colorado. And while searching for the farmhouse properties, I discovered a website for equine gestalt coaching. I didn't even know what that was. Again, serendipity. I put aside the farmhouse search and dove into that website, and I discovered that the program was founded by a woman who was right in the very town I was looking to live in Colorado. It was wild, in Longmont, Colorado. So it was the Touched by a Horse Equine Gestalt program. It was a 2-year program. So I jumped into that as soon as I had moved to Colorado and began living with Cherokee. And then within that program, one of the guests, the program had different guests who would come. And one of them was Anna Twinney, who was an animal communicator. And so I fell madly in love with that whole form of energy work. And I began studying with Anna. And then a horse trainer was suggested to me, and he was the perfect trainer for me because he was involved in Reiki, energy work, clairvoyance. You see where I'm going with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Just one thing led to the other, led to the other. So I ended up, I would start practicing stillness with my horses through this grounding exercise from 22 years at a philosophy school in New York. And while I was just practicing grounding, the Reiki practice, the attunement that I was given would come to mind often. I would ground myself in front of the horse, and then I would invoke the Reiki energy, and I would wash down myself, wash down the horse, and then bring them out to the round pen, and then I would have clients come in. So I'm giving a very short little quick version, but I just ended up practicing all of it together, grounding, Reiki, equine coaching. For some people, when they're doing equine coaching, they will actually hear what their horse is saying to the client. I don't think I have a lot of that going on. For me, it doesn't really come through that way. When I have an equine coaching program session going on, I tend to watch from the client, when they come back to the client. I don't tend to pick up on communication between the horse and the client. Other people do. One thing that's very clear when you're practicing with a horse in a round pen with your client, once the client gets into their head, starts telling stories, isn't really grounded in their body, it's amazing to see, Pam, how often the horse will walk away. They're not really interested in a lot of mental story. So when I see the horse kind of losing interest, I'll ask the client, I try not to intervene too much, but if that happens, I'll quietly say, you know, I'd like you to go back into the center of the round pen, and we're just gonna do a little grounding, gonna come back to a little still point, and I have them close their eyes. And while I'm taking them through, you know, feel the feet on the floor, feel the play of air on the skin, feel the sunshine or the wind, while their eyes are closed, the horses are coming back. Somebody is present. Somebody is still. I like that. Mm-hmm. It happens time and again. And by the time the person opens their eyes, there's the horse. The horse is at their side. So you can imagine me, the newbie to all of this, discovering that, oh, it doesn't just happen with the horses of the woman who was certifying me in the program. It's my own horses too. That was mind blowing because it seems magical. And then when you go home and you discover that it's something that horses overall like. Horses like stillness, not just the head of the program for coaching and gestalt. All horses like stillness, and that's what they rejoin when you ground yourself. It's amazing to see.
Yeah, and they and horses love energy work. I'm an energy body worker, and yeah, they just eat it up. They love it because everything is energy.
Right.
Okay, so without giving away the book, because if anybody wants to know about more about your story, they're going to have to get the book. So without giving away your whole story, what was the most profound experience from your journey that had the biggest transformation for you on a personal level?
Oh, definitely, I'd have to say that erring on the side of the yes is just sort of coming back to me. I have a very Western, analytical, lawyerly element to me. And so being willing to trust my instincts and knowing that the phrase going with your gut is really actually meaningful. You actually can listen into your body, listen into the words that arise in mind, and honor that without all the analysis, without all the lawyerly thinking. That was rather big for me, because I really do have that kind of mind that will, I can actually see a topic in outline form in my mind, you know, one, I can be very analytical. And when you're there taking care of a 1,000-pound animal that isn't acting right, and you get still, and then something comes to mind, whether it's an ointment, whether it's who to call, whether it's a memory of another horse you saw like that, getting still and seeing what arises and trusting that is a big deal to me, because it's not the analytical mind. It's the whole body, mind, spirit working at that point. I love that, really. I love to the extent that I can trust in that.
That's beautiful. Has it changed now that you had this transformation and this journey and experience? Has it changed the way you practice law at all?
That's a really brilliant question. To the extent that I can be a better listener, that's a better conversation with clients. I think I've learned, I so admire people who have good listening skills, who don't feel the need to jump in all the time. So as a lawyer, I do a lot of talking. You know, clients are asking questions, judges are asking questions. To the extent that I can just say what needs to be said and then listen as much as I can, that honors the other person much more than just, you know, talking at them all the time. And I think I've learned that, like with the animals, you often have to just be really still and really quiet, you know, because they don't use the English language out loud from their mouths. You know, you have to really be willing to let your listening and your attention go very wide. So I try to do that with clients. I still find that I can better my listening skills. That's always something that I'm looking to improve on more and more and more, because having words is not hard for me. Being still and listening, that's the challenge. That's the challenge. And animals teach you about the need to be still and listen, for sure.
I would venture to say that the horses made you a better attorney.
Oh, I think you're right, because I listen more to my clients now. Yeah.
So if any of the listeners are ready to jump onto your journey, where can they find out more about you and your book?
Well, I keep it pretty simple. I have a website that couldn't be easier. It's just nancyleegerson.com. They can go to that. I have an Instagram that's Nancy Lee G8. So it's Nancy, N-A-N-C-Y, Lee, L-E-E, G, and then the number 8. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'll spell the website, nancyleegerson.com. My daughter, Hannah, she's an artist, and she did the cover art for the book and the interior design. She did phenomenal work on it. She also designed my website. So it's a nice family affair. My other daughter, Elizabeth, took the photographs that are in the book.
Oh, wow.
So this delights me that it's a family. Yeah, it's a family contribution. That makes me very happy.
That's wonderful. And I will put the links in the show notes. And
thank you.
You already talked about the next book you're working on. Do you have an estimated release date on it yet?
Well, it's not even, it's got about 100 pages in, only been through one round of editing. If all goes well, I'm looking at sometime, this first book, The Horse Who Changed My Life, was published in June of this past year. Mm-hmm. I think I'll probably need all the way through the summer of this year. This book's going to go faster, but I think I probably need till the end of the summer for sure.
Yeah,
I will definitely be posting.
It'll go faster because now you know how to do it. Right.
Yeah. And all the things that the editors point out to you, you take note of them so you do not have to make those same mistakes again and again. I also discover I love the world of editing. I think it's a fine, it's such a fine occupation, really. Editors, proofreaders, those people provide a very vital service. Yeah.
Well, I asked Nancy to read to us a poem.
I was hoping that maybe I could read something from the book.
Yeah, I really loved your poems, and I know you write music and songs, and so I let you pick what you wanted to take us out with today.
Yay.
So whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I did reflect on it. One of the things at the 5-day horse retreat I went on where I met Cherokee, one of the things we did was yoga on horseback. That was really fun up in the mountains of Colorado, northern Colorado. So I was inspired, and back in the cabin at the retreat later that night, I wrote a poem about the experience of doing yoga on horseback. So it's not too long. It's called Equestrian, you know, as in equus, Equestrian Yoga for Cherokee. Mm. Bring your horse to a gentle stop upon a rocky mountaintop. Reach for the sun, embrace, release, rest together in universal peace. Stretch to the left, to center, to right. Open your eyes, thankful for sight. Your body's united, grounded on earth. A message arises, each moment's rebirth. Thank your horse for holding you steady and sharing in yoga prayer time. No creature is more willing to stand at the turn to trail and take you back down and across the river. He will do his best, in this he will not fail. Acknowledge with a smile your awestruck shiver. I thank you, Cherokee, for holding me steady and sharing in yoga prayer time. No creature is more willing to stand at the ready. No creature's company is more sublime.
Beautiful. Thank you. And the internet cut out just a little bit in the middle of that. I'm like, do I have your permission to reprint that? I'll put it in the poem in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask if it needs to be recited by me again, but you absolutely can reprint it, whatever is
best.
Yeah,
and then they'll have it in writing. That's beautiful.
Perfect.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Nancy Lee, for sharing your beautiful journey with us and putting it in the written word. And I'd like to encourage listeners to hop on Nancy's website and get The Horse Who Changed My Life, My Serendipitous Journey Through Equus. And if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you subscribe. Hopefully leave a positive review and please share this with other like-minded horse lovers. Until next time, stand in your inner horse crazy, and more importantly, enjoy your horse.